it's really hard to secure your own system without your partner organization system being just as secure. So there's an interdependency there that creates significant risk. And so everybody in the entire ecosystem needs to basically level up their security against the attacker in order for all of the system to be more secure.
This is GamyCast.
As a primary target for ransomware campaigns,
it's security and testing and performance and scalability.
Risk and compliance.
We can actually automate that.
Take that data and use it.
Joining me now is Eric Stride, Chief Security Officer at Huntress, and today we're discussing growing security concerns within the aviation industry. So, Eric, thanks for joining me and welcome.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
So, this is a really interesting conversation I'm about to have with you today because aviation, I've seen your background, you've got a great pedigree, so I'm assuming you're probably the best person to ask when it comes to this, but I really want to get into this a little bit more, considering aviation, aircraft, situations that we've been all reading in the news globally. Maybe let's sort of set the scene, like what's happening out there?
At the risk of sounding a bit alarmist, it's at a crisis point right now. As an industry, we've tracked a truly shocking rise in attacks against the civil aviation sector. The hard numbers show a dramatic 600% to year-over-year increase in cyber attacks between 2024 and 2025. And that surge is largely driven by organized ransomware campaigns. This isn't a gradual increase. Frankly, it's an explosion, demonstrating that adversaries have pivoted to target aviation as a high-leverage opportunity. I would say that what's going on is that threat actors have realized how interconnected and fragile the aviation supply chain is. The game changer was the recent widespread ransomware strike on Collins Aerospace that just occurred in September of 2025 here. Collins is a vital aviation IT provider. And when that attack hit their widely used check-in technology, major European hubs like London Heathrow, Brussels, and a few others were forced to revert to manual systems. We saw chaos, we saw massive backlogs, we saw thousands of passengers stranded. This single event proved that a strike on a single niche vendor can immediately cascade into a widespread operational collapse. That leverage is what threat actors are now weaponizing. And it's not just the big global incidents. You know, if we look back over the last 18 months or so, we've seen regional impacts that still cause major damage. Look at the Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, the SeaTac ransomware attack that happened in August of 2024, which disrupted multiple airport services and compromised the personal data of approximately 90,000 employees and contractors, or the significant disruptions to the check-in systems at Kuala Lumpur International Airport in March of 25 here. The bottom line is that the digital transformation of aviation is running far ahead of its security maturity. And criminal groups are, frankly, exploiting that maturity difference very aggressively.
Okay, so there's a couple of things in there. So I don't know if it's just me, but and I know, like, even back in the day, we didn't have social media. People could capture all this stuff. Hard to sort of get a fundamental grasp of what was happening globally. But is there just more plane incidents than before, or am I noticing it more? And it's sort of like that whole theory, like when you notice a blue car, you just keep noticing it. Is it that, or am I sort of onto something?
No, you're definitely onto something there. We've seen year over year the increase in this sector rise significantly, right? But this last 12-month period, it's been an explosion, right? And so it's become an attractive target, and the supply chain is a key weakness there too. We've seen that as a cybersecurity industry. I mean, if we go back to 2013, right, to date myself a little bit, doing cybersecurity then, and everybody talked about the Target breach and how the attackers got in through the HVAC vendor. That was another supply chain attack, and it opened people's eyes a bit and the attackers' eyes too, because now they're seeing that, hey, if I want to target major organizations, I don't need to target them directly. I just need to target their supply chain and find a way in. And we're seeing that across sectors, not just aviation.
So what's coming to my mind when you're talking about supply chain? So one thing, so I've spoken to people at Boeing before, and now you're obviously an aviation person more than myself. So just hear me out and follow this for a moment. When Boeing sells an aircraft to, I don't know, American Airlines or whoever, they said it's on the airline to then run the maintenance and all this other stuff, which can lead into, you know, this potential defects or any other stuff right then as well. because if we look at the intersection between physical and cybersecurity, but then people just are really easy to blame the manufacturer when it's like, well, hang on. And I've spoken to people at these sort of businesses, they're like, well, once we sort of sell it, like, that's not our responsibility to some degree. So do you think that it's easy to sort of just blame like certain manufacturers that are out there? And I think that people are not getting the whole picture. Help me understand that a little bit more.
Yeah. So what you're hitting on there is really some of the challenges we have with operational technology systems, OT systems as a whole, right? And this is very evident in aviation, right? I mean, we're talking the systems that control physical processes like baggage handling, air traffic control. Traditionally, these environments were quote unquote disconnected from your typical IT environment, and they had different security priorities, but now they're all interconnected. We're seeing a lot of convergence, and attackers are often penetrating the IT environment first and then pivoting to the high value safety critical OT systems that were really never designed to resist modern network-based attacks. And so this interconnectedness creates a massive attack surface area that criminals and state-sponsored groups are actively seeking to exploit. From a maintenance perspective, right, most of these vendors of OT systems look at it from a maintenance perspective, and they typically haven't really fully embraced the cybersecurity needs. And we're at a point now where that's being forced.
Yeah, okay. And I ask that because obviously, you know, when I'm doing research and I'm looking what people are saying out there, I hear like, oh, you know, it's another Boeing aircraft that's had an issue. But I think that's like, is if I buy a car from Hyundai and I drive 200,000 miles and I never get any maintenance, never do anything, and it breaks down, has an issue, I can't really sort of call up Hyundai and blame them for everything because I didn't do my end of the bargain. So do you think in terms of like accountability and stuff like that, some of the airlines are sort of getting away with some of the things, given that they are responsible for this when they're operating this aircraft in the, you know, out there in the field?
Bottom line, yes, they've gotten away with it in the past. I don't know if they're going to continue to get away with it, right? So, you know, driving your Hyundai, right? And I actually happen to have an Ioniq 5, right? And it has all my required maintenance activities. What we're going to see is that the vendors have to, for aviation, have to actually follow cybersecurity readiness in order to prove airworthiness. And this is a relatively recent development, right? So it was legally codified in the 2024 FAA Reauthorization Act, and the FAA published a notice of proposed rulemaking a couple months later to formally integrate cybersecurity into that concept of airworthiness. And they used the term intentional, unauthorized, and electronic interactions, right? And this basically defines any unauthorized human action like an electronic hack or disruption that has the potential to affect the aircraft systems and interfaces. And what this really means for the aviation industry is that manufacturers seeking type certification for transport category airplanes, engines, propellers are now required to conduct formal risk assessments, specifically identifying and mitigating these IUEI, the intentional and authorized electronic interactions threats. I always love how every sector has to make up their own acronyms, but these cybersecurity risks. And so it's forcing cybersecurity in aviation to no longer be a peripheral compliance task. It's going to become a foundational, non-negotiable element of the physical safety case. So the industry must now adopt the mindset of the OT security expert, prioritizing the system's integrity above all else, because failure of that integrity in this domain can have very disastrous consequences.
Okay, I want to zone in then on attractive targets. So for example, I mean, I worked in a bank in security. People want to get money. You're going to go to bank to get it, or you scam someone or whatever you want to do. But going back to your point around supply chain with the aviation industry, what do you think is sort of the benefit? Is it that they're transporting specific cargo on that aircraft, or like what's sort of the motivation, would you say?
I think it really comes down to three things, right? It's leverage, it's data, and it's complexity. Let's start with leverage, right? Aviation has a system built on real-time logistics and zero tolerance for downtime. When an attack hits, say a critical scheduling system or a check-in system, result is immediate. It's visible chaos. Estimates suggest that 1 hour of operational disruption at a large airport during peak time can cost an airline about $1 million. When you can guarantee that level of instant catastrophic financial damage, you generate incredible leverage for a ransomware demand. The second is the data, right? Airlines and airports are sitting on gold mines of sensitive information. think about all the information you have to give over to your airline when you travel, especially if you travel internationally, right? They don't just have your names and your credit card numbers. They've got detailed passenger data, and to include your PII, such as your date of birth, your home address, your passport number, an emergency contact, their number. They've got payment details. They've got extensive travel history. This data is extremely valuable for identity theft and financial fraud in the criminal markets, making a data breach basically a dual threat incident: disruption plus data theft. And then finally, the fundamental complexity on the system creates huge vulnerabilities, right? So aviation operates on a fragile convergence of the IT and the OT networks, as we were talking about just a moment ago. Those systems that control all of the physical systems combined with the network systems that handle more of your traditional IT and your ticketing and your data processing. But these are all connected. They have different security priorities. And so this interconnectedness is creating, as I said earlier, a huge, massive surface area that's providing a lot of opportunity for the attacker to have a much bigger impact than they were previously. And so kind of taking that to the next stage, right, that provides huge, huge opportunity to both, as an attacker, try to leverage these aviation industries, these airlines and such, into paying large ransoms or losing lots of money. And, oh, by the way, I'm going to take all your data and sell it on the dark market and make money there. Not me personally, the attacker, right? But it's a pretty serious risk.
Obviously, last year with that major vendor outage and how much that impacted specifically like Delta and friends, that obviously had a very big impact right across the world. So going back to your example, so that's, you know, LAX or Dallas, very big airports trafficking a lot of people, planes, etc. Walk me through the damage, just so people get a bit of an understanding of something goes wrong for an hour. How does the chaos start to unfold that quickly? And what are sort of the flow on effects, would you say?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So if you think about it, right, especially here in the United States, we have the busiest, most complex aviation system, right? Over 45,000 flights a day, right? The impact of a significant delay, right? Even something as simple as the check-in system and forcing organizations to revert to manual systems is going to impact their ability to process everybody through baggage check, through security, through boarding. And it ends up having effectively a domino effect all the way down. Right. And I think I might have referenced it earlier, right? The estimates that at a peak time, that's going to cost airlines about $1 million for 1 hour of disruption. And then if you think about how that cascades through their entire network, right? As flights are delayed at one major airport, then impacts a delay at another major airport, and then you have crew timeout issues. And pretty soon that $1 million of outage per hour becomes tens to hundreds of millions of dollars of impact to the organization, because everything is run on such tight interdependent schedules, right? And that's exactly what we saw last year with the major Delta outage, right? We're talking triple digit millions. So very, very significant impact. And again, that goes back to then the leverage, right? Attackers see this and see this as opportunities, because the airlines want to minimize that downtime as much as they can.
So the other interesting thing as well, so there's a show I was watching in Australia, it's called 24/7 Airport, I think, or Airport Security. Anyway, long story short, it's Melbourne Airport, a lot of flights going in and out of there. They sort of take you behind the scenes, but because aircrafts are coming in overseas or domestically, they're contingent on that actual airport running smoothly. So not only you got to think about your own company, you're then sort of borrowing the land in which all these aircrafts are sitting on, and then they walk you through like some of the problems that they have. They're like, well, we couldn't get this aircraft out to Dubai on time, and therefore they're starting to complain and passengers are angry, and you can just start to see the domino effect. So how does the actual airport take a lot of their accountability around while we have to make sure that we're servicing these airlines appropriately as well?
It's a great question, because they have a very symbiotic relationship between the two organizations, and they have to interconnect and share data, and their processes and their electronic systems have to interact as a result. And so if both organizations aren't applying all of the expected security measures, they're going to end up impacting each other, right? And so as an example, each system owner should be investing in robust hardening, network segmentation, continuous detection, and response monitoring. They need to make sure that they're implementing resilient operational protocols. And this effectively goes back to the supply chain challenge, because within this entire system, the weakest link is the component with the weakest security, right? Whether that's the airport or the airline or some outside vendor that provides a critical system to either one of those organizations. And so looking at it as a whole system of systems, it's really hard to secure your own system without your partner organization system being just as secure. So there's an interdependency there that creates significant risk. And so everybody in the entire ecosystem needs to basically level up their security against the attacker in order for all of the system to be more secure.
The operative word that you use there is like interdependency. So how would you say, given your experience, like the maturation in the aviation industry? Like, yes, you got the airline, then you're talking about the OT, which is the convergence in with like cybersecurity and systems. Then you've got vendors that you've got to use. And then on top of all that, you need to work with an airport to make sure that, and multiple airports, mind you, because you've got to go from A to B. What's all that look? And, you know, what do you think about that in terms of the overall industry?
Right. So I think it kind of takes us right back to the beginning here, right? We're at a crisis point. When you look at the security of the overall aviation sector, it is not to the standard it needs to be yet. And so it creates significant risks, right? The risk of ransomware, like we talked about with regards to the data, right? Which we're seeing all the time. Ransomware is the tool of choice for the attackers. We're seeing over half of aviation cyber decision makers, quote unquote, reporting that they've been a victim to ransomware in the last 12 months or so. But that interconnectedness, that supply chain really is the largest attack vector in my mind, right? If we go back to the Collins Aerospace attack, right, that shows that third party vendor, right, is key. And it wasn't just localized, right? It ended up having a global effect based on that attack, that the attacker could bring these core operations to a halt across multiple airlines, multiple airports. And so that ecosystem is really only as guarded as that least secure partners. And so these threat actors, they're really looking for that weakest link, that cheapest, most efficient path to the primary high value target. And really the disruptions caused by incredibly basic security failures. We look at the data on a lot of these attacks, the vast majority of large-scale incidents that occurred in the last year or so, better than 70%, really began as something as rudimentary as credential theft or unauthorized access. We're still seeing mass disruption stemming from things like phishing, social engineering, neglected default passwords, not necessarily some zero-day attack, which addresses addressing these threats means not just buying expensive new tools, but forcing a culture of rigorous fundamental cyber hygiene across the global supply chain. I'm not saying you don't buy the tools, but the tools alone aren't going to do it. You have to have this culture of cybersecurity.
For remote-first companies, maintaining a strong security posture across distributed teams can be a challenge. That's why thousands of modern remote-friendly firms turn to Vantaa. Vantaa automates the heavy lifting for ISO 27001, SOC 2, GDPR, and more, keeping you compliant and audit ready wherever your team logs in from. Visit vantaa.com/KBCast. VANTA.com/KBCast to learn more. So you mentioned before, the aviation industry is not at the standard. How do you think we got there? Like, how do you think now it's like, well, I mean, they play a pretty important role in our society. So how do you think it's sort of just diminished into not at the standard? I mean, in this day and age.
Many of the systems are decades old, right? And so they are in need of modernization. And it's a risk that they have been aware of for years, right? That intentional unauthorized electronic interactions has been a term being pushed to the FAA for over a decade, right? And trying to work these pieces in, but it's been seen as a secondary priority, right? Priority number one has always been the operations, right? Trying to keep it working without disruption. And so now we're being forced, because of all these attacks, into that modernization. And It is government activity. It is large systems that take many years to replace. And so the maturing of the attacker's tradecraft has just accelerated such that they're forced to have to engage that modernization now.
So do you think we're at that point in time, it's like, we've got to fall, like people's backs are against the wall. Like we've seen enough. People are almost living in fear. I've heard people when I'm in Ubers, when I'm going to the airport myself, they're like, oh, I just don't want to travel. Don't want to travel domestically, internationally. I'm scared. So what does that modernization journey look like? And I am aware with critical systems, it's really hard. I mean, sometimes some people are like, hey, we've had this controller for 40 years, but first of all, it's really expensive to replace. It's not even on any network. And what do we do? Legacy systems, you can't patch them. How does that modernization look? Because we can't have what's been going on to continue.
No, 100% agree with you. An enormous undertaking, right? And so the FAA has actually been pushing it. They call it their next generation air transportation system, or next gen. And really this goal is to move the US airspace system from ground-based radar-centric system to a satellite-based data-centric one. This is really going to revamp everything from communications to navigation to surveillance, automation, and information management, all designed to increase safety, efficiency, and capacity. From my perspective, right, the most urgent part of this effort is the replacement of the core infrastructure, stuff you were just hitting on. And so the FAA is actively seeking a prime integrator right now to develop this new flow management data and services system, which is a massive overhaul, replacing this current decades-old traffic flow management system, which is struggling with performance and maintainability. And so a failure in that current system is what caused the massive flight grounding across the U.S. about 2 years ago. And it just underscores the need for a modern, resilient replacement. And I think all of the attacks that we're seeing recently is just putting more fuel on that fire. This modernization, though, does introduce what we call a little bit of security debt, right? So an example would be a core component of NextGen is the reliance on ADS-B, which stands for Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast. And most folks who have followed aviation are familiar with ADS-B. It's been around for a couple decades now, which improves situational awareness, but it has a critical inherent flaw. Its messages, which include position, identity, velocity, they're fundamentally unauthenticated and unencrypted. This allows attackers to conduct classic cyber-physical attacks, spoofing where they inject false data to create ghost aircraft and confuse controllers, or jamming where they overwhelm communication frequencies to cause a critical loss of situational awareness. So this modernization is critical, but we have to pair it with immediate, secure-by-design solutions. Like perhaps we need digital signatures on ADS-B to avoid adding more security risk as we modernize the systems. Going to your point about the fear of the public, right? Many would say this fear is absolutely justified, but the media is also amplifying it. And so if we look at the visibility of all these high profile incidents, whether it's physical near misses or massive cyber disruptions within the US here, 65% of Americans reported being more nervous about flying, right? They don't see these digital failures as just IT glitches. They're perceived as failures of operational safety. And that perception has consequences. And so it's translating into action. Over a third of Americans have admitted that their anxiety has led them to change their travel plans, either by taking alternative transportation or canceling trips entirely. This behavior is amplified by negative sentiments and narratives being circulated across social media. And that actually presents a pretty serious threat to the long-term growth and stability of the industry. So the industry, they need to respond. And you can't promise perfect security because that's impossible in this environment. Right? All of us in cybersecurity know that there's no such thing as an impenetrable network. And so the foundation of this modernization and of rebuilding trust has to be demonstrating cyber resilience. It's the capacity to minimize the impact in an inevitable attack and to ensure rapid detection, response, and recovery to maintain these critical services. So we're starting to see regulators actually mandate that. So that's a good thing.
Okay, there's a couple of things in there that I want to get into. So in terms of impact, like I mentioned before, I worked in a bank, right? So something happens, we'll give you your money back as a bank. But when you're talking about like aviation and stuff like that, like the supply chain, something goes wrong, all of a sudden, you know, people can like lose their life as a consequence. So is this being taken into consideration, would you say? Like, I mean, it's a lot, you know, when I was working in a bank, like, we can just generate some money in someone's account, but I can't generate someone's life coming back. So that's the convergence between it's starting to enter into this terrain of physical danger now. And these are things I've spoken about on the show before, whether it's a water plant, something goes wrong and the water gets infected and people drink it and then they get sick and potentially die. So am I being like dramatic, or what do you think about that when I ask you that question?
I think you're hitting on something that's pretty important there, right? It's mindset shift from protecting data, protecting physical life. In traditional IT security, the priority is data confidentiality. But in aviation, particularly with all of the OT that controls aircraft and critical systems, that non-negotiable priority is availability, integrity, and safety. If a malicious actor compromises the integrity of flight data or denies the availability of a system like air traffic control, the risk instantly translates into physical danger and potential loss of life. And we have to take it seriously.
And this is the part, I mean, I've been speaking to people like yourself on the show for years, and I think that this is getting into like these kinetic sort of issues that perhaps when we're looking at just like, oh, you know, they stole some data, like all of that, okay, that's definitely not good. But like when you're getting into like, oh, you know, a whole power plant exploded and people died from it, like these are the things I'm starting to hear more come into the conversation I'm running on this show ever than before. So it must mean that this is a reality and this could happen.
I would say that is a very accurate assessment. I think that is the areas where we have the greatest risk is our critical infrastructure and key resources across the nation. And the cyber resilience of those systems are not at a level where they are adequately protected from cyber attack. And we have to, as a nation, engage there very aggressively in order to prevent the catastrophic impact of successful attacks on those systems.
And then going back to impact, and even like last year with the outage, for example, people started to wake up a lot more. I noticed just everyday businesses, corporates thinking, well, we can't have that happen. We lost so much money. We got angry customers on the phone. So would you say, given your background, unfortunately, it may have to get to an extreme catastrophic event for maybe people to start taking this stuff a bit more seriously?
Unfortunately, that's fairly accurate, right? It's usually not until it hits home. It either hits your organization, your business, your government, or that of a close partner or ally before folks really take it seriously, because there is upfront investment, right? And from a business perspective, most organizations are trying to minimize their costs, and they see security as a cost center rather than as something that's protecting their operations. And so that applies very much to the operational technology space, where they historically had ignored cybersecurity. They're getting wiser to the fact that they have to invest there, but it's a trade-off between how much are they willing to invest. And so I think it's when organizations take a look at the full impact of the potential consequences that they then become more willing to invest appropriately in that security improvement, modernization, the monitoring, the response actions. But if they aren't taking the full impact of a successful cyber attack into consideration, they rarely invest appropriately. And like I said, they typically only do that after it either hits them or some or another organization similar to them, where they're like, oh, wow, how do I not become that organization? How do I avoid the same consequences? So it's unfortunate that frequently you have to witness a successful attack first before it becomes real to folks.
So we just focus on like aviation companies, airline companies for a moment. Would you say that they are focused on this? Because that's their business. That's their core business and what they do. So would you say, because I mean, I've seen and I've heard people speak on the show in the past around, oh, you know, they cut corners in security, something happened, and then they've obviously had to go and do a whole bunch of work and, you know, completely revamp their security. I mean, there's been major breaches in Australia from a PII perspective. They've had to really go back through and invest heavily and change the way they were doing things. But do you think like airline companies are starting to do that, or are they sort of just going, oh, you know, it's going to be a big job, but I'm hoping we can sort of just get through it and see what happens? Or
I think as a whole, it's slow to adoption, and regulation is going to force it, both here in the U.S. with what the FAA is doing with the integrating cybersecurity into airworthiness, also with what the European Union is doing with their regulation on information security and forcing these organizations to actually invest upfront and to validate their systems meet expected security standards. And so for like the European one, for example, I believe it's early 2026 that airlines, airports, and maintenance organizations have to comply with the compliance requirements to integrate the improved information security into their systems and processes. So I think it's a combination of folks realizing that, hey, these are serious problems, right? We're seeing it with the significant increase in tax combined with regulatory pressure that's forcing the companies to be more actively engaged in improving their security posture.
So I've watched a few plane crash documentaries. I've watched a fair few, actually. I don't know. I seem to always find them when I'm traveling. But one thing that I noticed, there was one in the US somewhere, they got some subcontractor in. And then when they obviously did the audit and they realized, hey, the subcontractor missed like 20 steps in doing the maintenance, and that's why it resulted in the whole aircraft crashing and people died. But if you look at that from a security perspective, if someone doesn't do something and the flow-on effect, and all of a sudden it could lead to something catastrophic like that, something that people may think, oh, this thing I've got to do every week, maybe they don't think about it like that in terms of the impact that it has really on the front lines. Do you think because sometimes when we're in security, we're sort of behind our laptops or maybe we're in our SOC, but we're not really on the front lines. We're not seeing the impact. We're not up there dealing with the customers. Do you think sometimes people may not take their role in aviation from a security information security perspective as seriously because they just don't see it, perhaps out of sight, out of mind, or?
Yeah, no, that's the challenge of connecting IT to operations, right? And we see that across many industries, right? And I've seen it in my background and my other roles as well, where even the IT teams, not just the management teams, the IT teams are kind of narrow visioned on, well, this is what I do, right? And they don't tie how decisions and failures in their job have second and third order effects, which obviously in something like aviation, right, that's catastrophic potential impacts. And so tying the security of the system to the operational outcomes is critical, right? And that's a mindset shift that has to be driven from the top down, right? That it is not just about IT. This is about safety of flight, right? This is about safety of navigation for waterways for those kinds of vessels, right? This is for safety of operations for the military, right? This is continuity of operations for the government. And because of our significant dependence on these systems and how they operate and drive all of these operational technology processes and systems, you have to draw that line. You have to draw that connection as a practitioner, as an IT systems administrator, as an IT security professional to, hey, what I am doing is not just about the data here. It's about protecting safety of flight for these operations, for the airplanes in the air, for the air traffic control system that guides them in, for the systems on the ground. You have to draw that connection all the way out and the potential impact. And it has to be top-down driven. There's a leadership ownership there as well.
So would you say that's happening, or do you say it's happening now because of the regulation and it's like, okay, we've got to force your hand?
I would say it's probably more recent. It is definitely more of a being forced because of a combination of all of the recent attacks and the regulation. Not to say there wasn't a voice before. There's been a voice going back at least as far back as 2014 saying, hey, we really need to consider this stuff. We really need to work this into how we look at the safety of flight. But it's only recently that we're really seeing it take hold and enforcing people's mindset shift that way.
But isn't this how these businesses lose trust? And the issue with aviation as well, you kind of have to use these airlines. I mean, in the US, there's definitely more to choose from, but in Australia, there's like two major ones. So it's like, you need to get somewhere. You're just going to have to go, well, I'm just going to have to go on this aircraft. Got no choice. So do you think that maybe because they've got the monopoly in the aviation, it's like, well, we can probably cut a few corners because there's only a few of us and you kind of have to, you're reliant on these companies from getting you places.
I don't think it's deliberate. Like, it's not a, you know, hey, we're going to cut this in order to, because they don't have a choice. I think it's much more a result of trying to drive towards operational efficiencies, right? And so I don't think it's deliberate negligence there, right? Not to put a word in your mouth there, but it almost sounded like negligence. But I think you see some of these things that were previously considered less important because they weren't factored in directly into the aircraft safety, airworthiness aspects, that they weren't given as much attention. And so now that they're being factored into airworthiness, they're going to be forced, or there's going to be major consequences if those things are cut, right?
So quick question, when you're going on a domestic or international flight and they do the routine, a lot of the times I tune out, should I be paying more attention moving forward?
You know, if you've flown enough to know, you know, where the exits are, where your life vest is, should you need it, you're probably doing all right. Now, if you start seeing a lot of other weirdness going on, then maybe you want to pay attention a little bit more and reorient yourself to where those accents are.
And Eric, what do you think sort of moving forward now? So any sort of closing comments, final thoughts you'd like to leave our audience with?
Right. So while the aviation industry has faced its share of cybersecurity hurdles, there's an opportunity to strengthen these defenses going forward. It takes a lot of action in coordination, right? It's not just owned by one, it's owned by the entire ecosystem, right? And so in order to strengthen and to ensure security here, we have to look at the entire supply chain. I think regulation is going to help us force that way down towards things like enforcing encryption in places, or maybe there isn't, mandatory incident reporting schemes, right? Having more proactive investments in adhering to resilient frameworks. So that way the entire industry can try to manage the threat, rebuild the trust with flyers who are anxious about flying, and thwart bad actors from gaining access into their critical systems and operations and to be successful. And so it's an industry that we are all reliant upon, as you said, right? We've all got to fly to get places. And so the aviation industry owes it to us to be providing the safest experience possible. And that means that they have to invest in securing their systems from cyber risk and cyber attack.
This is KBCast, the voice of cyber.
Thanks for tuning in. For more industry-leading news and thought-provoking articles, visit kbi.media to get access today.
This episode is brought to you by Mercsec, your smarter route to security talent. Mercsec's executive search has helped enterprise organizations find the right people from around the world since 2012. Their on-demand talent acquisition team helps startups and mid-sized businesses scale faster and more efficiently. Find out more at mercsec.com today.